You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to what a long, strange trip it's been. Edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Guys, it's April, and 2024 has already been a long year for Alabama football. And, you know, it's been a really good year for Alabama football, if you take the full measure of it. Let's take a minute to do that just before we lead up to Saturday's A-Day game. So, obviously, the events of January 10th were unexpected, but also inevitable. Saban was always going to retire. We've just been kicking the can down the road because, well, why wouldn't we? We've had a good thing going. It's an era we didn't want to end. Cases have been made 3 of the last 4 years that this may have been Saban's best coaching job of his entire career. 2020, the COVID year, Alabama won a national title, but overcoming the COVID year. 2021, the post-COVID year, suddenly that became maybe his best coaching job. There was significant staff turnover, a freshman quarterback, immature personalities on the team, meaningful injuries, and that team finished minutes away from a consecutive national title. And then 2023, this most recent year, resurrecting a team that, again, air quotes, didn't have a quarterback, and then, of course, pulling the team from the rainy, gloomy Saturday, September in Tampa, and ended up being minutes away from being in the championship game. Those are 3 tough seasons and 3 accomplished seasons. When we think about someone doing the best job of their career, there's a corollary that isn't as lovingly embraced. Often, when one does their best job ever, it's because the circumstances were the worst. It's the hardest job that they've done, but they still overcame and accomplished. And so when we say that maybe 3 of the last 4 seasons have been Saban's best career years, that might also mean that they're 3 of the hardest years he's had in his career. So if you take that and say a wealthy 72-year-old with ambitions and interests beyond the field would call it a day and retire, well, I guess we should all be so lucky to be able to make decisions like that on our own terms. Nonetheless, January 10th, 2024 is still a day to remember for Alabama fans. It's a day when Saban pulled a Forrest Gump on us and he just decided to stop running. It was late that afternoon when I opened a very fine bottle of brown water, retired to the basement, and celebrated the end of an era. 17 years. Thank you, Coach Saban. 2 days later, I revisited that bottle to celebrate when Alabama hired Kalen DeBoer, former Washington Husky head coach and recent national title game contender. Thank you, Greg Byrne. When Saban retired, I quickly settled on 2 candidates that I believed were right for the job, and Kalen DeBoer was on that very short list. Most times when coaches are fired or pressured out, even the legends, it can complicate the hiring process. is factions can emerge, and the underlying reality in those cases is that the program may have run aground. That's not at all the case for Alabama, Saban, and DeBoer. This is Andrew Luck taking over for Peyton Manning, or perhaps Aaron Rodgers relieving Brett Favre. This is rare, this level of transfer with the relative health of the program is very, very rare. Kalen DeBoer's record in ascension in college football, it speaks for itself. We've all read the articles when they were published back in January. I'm not going to quote his resume back to you. You've all read it, seen it. But I want to touch on three factors that are maybe a little bit unique, maybe a little bit different, that I believe they're meaningful for to me, if not you. These are factors that indicate immediate and continued success for Alabama under Kalen DeBoer. And so the first is the cupboard is not bare. This is a gear shift, not a rebuild. The program, not the team, but the program as a whole is set. The talent, the mission, the facilities, the branding, the administration, the fans, the winning momentum is already in place. As we see when new coaches come in sometimes, there's a tremendous amount of energy and effort put into launching the program, fighting the gravitational pull that's in place, building momentum to move the program forward. That's a lot of work. Alabama is already in orbit. We're changing drivers. That's all. Two, a looming head coach emeritus is not intimidating to Kalen DeBoer. We've talked about Saban, or we've heard reports of Saban having an office in the facility, or it's an office in the stadium. Technically, it's not in the football facility or in the football offices. It's at the stadium. So there's already some baked in separation. But Kalen DeBoer has experience at Washington, where Chris Peterson had an office in the building. And while Kalen DeBoer didn't immediately follow Peterson, Peterson cast a shadow over the program, similar to what Saban does at Alabama. That did not in the least intimidate Kalen DeBoer. He used Peterson as a reference and then did his own thing to build a program, got him into the national title game. DeBoer will do the same thing at Alabama. He will not be intimidated by Saban's presence. It will not impact him. He may leverage it, but it won't be a negative impact. It won't be intimidating. It won't change his behavior in any way. Again, he has reps in that setting, in that context, in that situation. So that's important. Three, Kalen DeBoer did not flinch. He was Kramer. I'll take it. What is it? Zero hesitation taking the Alabama job, replacing Saban, expectations in general, SEC, moving the family across the country. Zero hesitation. After meeting with his team, he was on the plane on the way to Tuscaloosa and hasn't stopped running, hit the ground running, and hasn't stopped running since that time. In subsequent interviews, he's been completely respectful of Alabama, its legacy, its history, its time with Saban, its time with other coaches. But there's been no hint of him saying the job's too big, or the job is an unwieldy challenge, or the task is too large. You can tell he is incredibly confident that he knows how to win football games. He knows how to program build, and he's taking over the reins of a dynasty in motion. And I believe he has a high degree of confidence that he's going to maintain a high level of performance, even taking over for Coach Saban. I've got a couple bonus factors. So those are three sort of things that sort of jump out to me. There's a couple bonus factors. DeBoer isn't a Saban guy. And I read that as a tremendous plus. He's not going to try to be Saban. He's not going to try to imitate Saban. He's not going to sort of take on a Saban-type decision. What would Saban do in this situation? He's not going to do or ask any of those questions. He's going to do what Kalen DeBoer would do in this situation. If his tenure works, and I'm highly confident that it will, then that plays into his favor because he's being his own man. If it doesn't work, it's a greater than 0% chance that it doesn't work, but I'm a lot of confidence that DeBoer's going to be at Alabama for a long time and win championships and sort of manifest his own legacy. But if it doesn't, there's a subtle benefit that comes with DeBoer being the next guy. And that's that the cord has been cut. He's not a Saban guy. The cord has been cut. If Alabama is out to replace a coach in a couple of years, Saban's not going to be spending that time or the next 20 years searching in the shadow of Saban to find that replacement. They'll continue to commit to hiring the next best available coach, just like they did with DeBoer. And I think that's significant for any program. I think it's especially significant for an Alabama program who chased coaches with a Bear Bryant legacy for far too long. And so I think that's significant. And maybe not so much a big deal, but another little bonus thing I'll give you is that in an interview, Saban, or DeBoer rather, talked about not using profanity, not cussing at practice, not cussing in the context of getting on the players. And damn, that's some shit. All right, let's go to player transitions. Damn, I guess, right? The portal, damn the portal. But we've been there before, and I think May will remind us that the portal is a door that swings both ways. I think it's a little bit like baseball. The opponents, when the portal window opened and there was a 30-day sort of grab bag day in Tuscaloosa, grab a player, that was our opponents getting their top half of the inning in, if you will. And when that sort of slowed down and there was some other transition and Alabama started picking up players, that's the bottom half of the inning. That's Alabama having sort of an opportunity to sort of level things out. And DeBoer was highly successful in that. Brought in 8 players so far, and I suspect when the portal opens back up in May that Alabama will pick up 3 to 5 additional players, and I think they'll potentially be impact players at positions of need. And we'll talk about positions of need here in just a little bit. But I think what we're going to find out, and this is a truth, this is ever since the portal has been sort of a real thing the last handful of years, Alabama's always won the portal. Now, I don't mean winning the portal relative to the rest of college football, but I mean relative to Alabama. We're going to lose some players and we're going to gain some players. And is that a net loss or a net gain? And Alabama's always come on the side of that being a net gain. The deck is stacked a little higher against this year because Alabama lost so many players in the portal. But I think when we do the calculus after the last sort of portal season, Alabama's going to net be ahead. Hell, in fact, Caden Proctor's coming back. And so one of the bigger losses is coming back. There's probably not other players coming back, but I think it's a net. I think when we do net it out, Alabama's going to come out ahead. That's not to say that I'm disappointed that players left. I truly am. There's a handful of players that I would wish would have hung around. Certainly, maybe even come back. Although I don't think that happens. Caleb Downs, Dez Ricks, Earl Little Jr., Terrence Ferguson, Jake Pope, Amari Nyblack, Isaiah Bond. But you remember the last time a tight end and wide receiver went to Texas? I don't know. Trey Amos and Antonio Kite are certainly players that I wish wouldn't have left, but they did. And so Alabama will work on replacing them again in the portal and has already brought in 8 players that will offset some of that as well. Let's talk about coaching staff. I want to be a little bit careful how I say this. I'm not trying to deploy a revisionist history or undermine the legend of Saban. That just will never happen. But I think Saban was the star on his coaching staff at an increasing rate, especially maybe over the last few years of his tenure. I think as Coach Saban got older, he had a harder time hiring assistant coaches. You can always argue that, well, they want to have Saban on their resume, and there's high value to that. I agree. But there's also high value to coaches, and we're talking about coaches that would be recruited to come to Tuscaloosa, to Alabama. So these are going to be your higher-end coaches, the coaches that are going to have more options. And if they've got a kid starting high school next year, they want to know. They want a level of guarantee that Saban isn't going to retire 2 years into that. And then you've got to move your family potentially across the country, break up a kid sort of mid high school. Those are the types of things that coaches think about. Frankly, they're the types of things that parents think about, that just adults think about. But coaches making really nice salaries that are in demand, high-end coaching jobs, they have leverage when it comes to sort of personal life balance. It's a brutal job, but my kid's not going to get yanked out of high school unless it's something, you know, that's impossible to prevent. And so coming to Alabama when coach is already 70, 71, 72 years old is a challenge. And so I think Saban did have a challenge the last segment of his career, and he's talked about it a little bit. I think he had a challenge bringing in a top-flight coaching staff. He was able to mask a lot of that, but, you know, nonetheless, I think there's a reality to that. And so with this new staff, with Kalen, I think there's a lot of similarities between Kalen and Saban with their dedication and confidence that they're going to build a winner. But the coaching staff as a whole is maybe a little younger, not so young that they don't have quality experience, but sort of in the nice sort of upward trajectory of their career. And I think there's a neat sort of vibe that I get from this coaching staff. There's a lot of coaches that have worked together in other places, and not just at Washington because they came with DeBoer, but some of the coaches at Indiana and some of the coaches at other positions and at other places. And it seems like there's almost a little of, hey, if we ever get the opportunity to sort of do it our way somewhere, let's all get together and do it. And there's a certain vibe that goes with that that I think is exciting, is interesting, and I think this staff has it. I think the question with these guys is less of stability, and instead it's something along the lines of how much ass can we kick at Alabama if we can maintain Alabama's kicking ass ways. And I'll help you with the easy ones. I think the answer is a lot. I think they can kick a lot of ass, and this is an exciting staff. I think we'll spend more time talking about the coaching staff after A-Day, but some of the ones that jump off the page at me so far are Kane Womack, Jamarcus Shepherd. I've heard reports that Jamarcus may be the best wide receiver coach in college, and so to land him, certainly at a position where Alabama has had need over the last several years, I think is tremendously exciting. Mo Lindquist, co-defensive coordinator, defensive back coach. He's an interesting character. I watched an interview when all the coaches were being hired. There was an interview that he did not long after taking the job at Buffalo, and just talking about his career, his family, his philosophy. And I thought that was a fascinating interview, a good insight into Lindquist. I think he's a big pickup for Alabama. I think he's going to be a tremendous recruiter. And not on the field, but Courtney Morgan, the general manager, I think he's going to be an interesting hire, and it's going to be fun to see sort of how he plays out. He is one of the coaches, and he may be the only coach besides DeBoer himself that was on the plane that landed in Tuscaloosa with the DeBoer family. Courtney Morgan may have been the only coach. And so talking about just immediately being in and immediately all in, he closed up shop and hopped on the plane and came to Tuscaloosa, and I think he's been all in. So those are just a list of my favorites. I think all of these represent upgrades over the prior staff, and I think many of the other coaches are upgrades as well. Look, this will be really honest. I wish Ryan Grubb and Scott Huff, offensive coordinator and line coach respectively, I wish they had stayed. I think they might make the difference between a great staff, between a really good staff and a great staff. I think they may have elevated, but I get it. They had an opportunity to stay in Seattle, not have to move, family and friends, network, circle, kids in school, and then just move over to the NFL team as opposed to the college team. I'm sure that there was a lot of family conversation around that. And I think if you're truly putting family first in some regard, that's not a bad decision that they made. So I get it. I'll say that I get it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
All right, let's transition to A-Day, which is already somehow this Saturday. So in no particular order, here are five watch items that I have for Saturday. And I'll just run through, set these up, explain why these qualify as my top five. Defensive backs. This probably truly is. I don't think there's necessarily an order on these things, but if I had to pick one, it would be defensive backs. Alabama lost 10 DBs from last year's squad, including, you know, three guys going pro. Nine of the 10 could have come back, but elected not to. Some we understand why and some we don't. Six of the 10 were corners or corner types. Think of like the star position or the Husky position in the Womack defense. And then so that's a pretty even split. I thought it might be skewed to corner a little bit more, but six out of 10, that's within the range of being in the middle. Alabama has had attrition in the defensive backfield before. A couple of 3 years ago, there were seven players that left, which is an incredible high number. But when you go back and look at those names, there were a lot of players that I'm not that worried about him. The fact that that guy's moving on doesn't bother me. And so out of seven, you know, maybe there was a couple, and some of those were pro as well. And so you can't really hold that against a player. And so you get down pretty quickly to where there's just a couple of guys that might, you know, maybe be an impact. But this year, it's a significant number that would compete for starting, that would compete for starting positions. We listed players, you know, even just a minute ago. But, you know, Caleb Downs, Des Ricks, Eli Little, Jake Pope, Trey Amos, Antonio Kite. That's a nice secondary right there. And so those are definitely big losses. And so how is Alabama replacing those this year? Well, I'll tell you, thank God for Malachi Moore. Malachi could obviously have elected to transfer. Any number of programs would be excited to have Malachi Moore. But he could have elected to go pro. And in fact, he's one of the players that I certainly did expect to go. But he elected to come back. And Malachi Moore's in an interesting situation. A little bit of, you know, clowns on the left of me, jokers to the right. In a five-man sort of nickel backfield, Malachi Moore's going to be, you know, on the field with two transfers, Damani Jackson and Keon Saab at corner and safety, respectively. And it projects on the field with two freshmen, Xavien Brown and Red Morgan, at corner and star, or the Husky slot corner, respectively. The two deep will be littered with youth unless the portal really picks in. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I'll tell you, last year at A-Day, I left A-Day with a tremendous amount of excitement and optimism about the Alabama secondary, and I just want a sliver of that Saturday. I want to see a little bit, I need to see a little bit of play that inspires confidence coming out of A-Day. I think there's been a lot of sort of disruption in the defensive backfield. The play style is going to be different with the new regime, and would like to see the secondary perform at a level that allows us to leave the stadium with a little bit of confidence. So that's what I'd say about my first watch item. Another watch item is offensive line. When is offensive line not a watch item, at least in some regard? It's a similar multiplayer unit that must perform as sort of as one, as a cohesive unit. So similar to the defensive backfield in that regard. And maybe the best that the offensive line can grade out with is an incomplete come Saturday. Center Parker Brailsford may not play. Looks like he's not going to transfer out of the program. Looks like he doesn't really have an injury. There's just something that's limiting his practice, although I have heard that he has performed well and he's making friends on the team. So hopefully he'll be back maybe even this week for Saturday's game. By the time you hear this, you may have a different update. But if he's not available to, you know, to compete, then that's a little bit of an incomplete. Caden Proctor is going to come back and likely be one of the tackles, left or right. At this point, I don't care. But I imagine he comes back and is one of the tackles. And so potentially 40% of your offensive line may not be available for Saturday. And so that's an incomplete grade. But there's a lot of meaningful things to watch in the meantime. Elijah Pritchard, is he going to demonstrate himself capable of manning one of the tackle positions? I had him penciled in as a starter at left tackle last year, and he struggled at A-Day and struggled into the season, and that's what gave way to Caden Proctor. So it'll be interesting to see if Elijah Pritchard sort of kicks back and is ready to play. And then James Brockenmeyer at center, I've had heard great things about his progress. It's ironic if he's the Brockermeyer that sort of breaks through. His brother had to quit football, medical reasons, and medically retire from football while at college, which, you know, you feel really, really bad about. But it was his brother Tommy that was the heralded recruit, and James was, I won't say the afterthought, but James was secondary in terms of recruiting rankings and such. But James may be the one that actually ends up with a starting role at Alabama at center. So that'll be interesting to see. I want to see, I call him sort of the fab freshman from the 23 class. Alabama recruited a host of youngsters in last year's class. Miles McVay, Olos Allen, Wilkin Formby, Rock Montgomery. I thought they all looked really, really good coming out of A-Day last year, and then they received some playing time as the season progressed. I'd like to see that group develop. And what we'd like to do, even if we give sort of an incomplete score at the starting list, I'd like to see us come out of A-Day with, you know, 7 or 8 candidates, at least on paper, candidates that could compete for the starting role and backup positions. And so, you know, you're going to play 5. You'd like to have a backup center that gets you to 6. You'd like to have a swing backup that gets you to 7. But, you know, if you're really doing it right, you have a swing backup at guard and a swing backup at the tackle positions. And so that gets you to 8. If you have 8 guys that you feel really confident about playing, winning play at the offensive line, then that's a lot of depth, and you're in really good shape. If we can get to about 7 of those coming out of A-Day, I think that would be really, really good. And then I think there's some freshman recruits, and I hate to sort of rely on a freshman, although last year Alabama did, then maybe when we get in the fall camp, we're really looking for one of those guys to pop. So we'll see how that plays out. There's a lot of names, and there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for those players to step up. Let's talk about wide receiver. It's same question, different year. Who's number one? So who's going to be the number one receiver? I think Jeremy Bernard, Kobe Prentice, and Kendrick Law probably are candidates for that position. I don't want to put that level of pressure on Orion Williams, the true freshman coming in, but Alabama has had outstanding freshman receivers before, so maybe he's an outside shot for that position. I don't know necessarily that he's going to be participating in A-Day. I don't think that he is. I hate the injury to Jalen Hale. His freshman last year played limited time, but played and looked good. He was in a rotation, so coaches were confident in him. I hate that he got injured, and it looks like he might not be available until sometime in the season this fall. So we'll see how that goes. I'm excited to see Caleb Oden, tight end, moving to wide receiver. He goes about 6'4", 215, and so he doesn't have the bulk to be a tight end, although he has the height. And I think as only a true freshman, he's going to grow from there. I think what's intriguing about him is not only is that as athleticism, so that, easy for me to say, so that he can step out at wide receiver. What's interesting to me, the question sort of that poses to me is, you know, everyone has a type, right? And so the tall receiver where you sort of visualize using short yarded situations, maybe at the goal line, matched up with a DB and sort of using the height advantage, almost basketball style. Some coaches are really, really good at that. Saban never really embraced that. For my money, he never really embraced it. If we go back over the years, there were quite a number of tall receivers that never really, that were perfect for that type of role, but they never really sort of manifest into that role. And I wonder with this coaching staff, is that something that they will take advantage of? They will look for those types of matchups and do so intentionally. So that's interesting. Emmanuel Henderson is a player that I'm infinitely interested in. He came in incredibly heralded and then split time between running back and wide receiver, which allowed him to gain traction at neither position. And in fact, all he really got for it was an injury. And so that kind of put him almost a year behind in sort of blending in with the wide receivers. And he went back to wide receiver. And then he got sort of dinged up again, and that set him further back. And last year it looked like, hey, he's going to do something, and he was sort of dinged again. And so is this guy so star-crossed, as talented as he is? Because all the reports have always been that he's killing it in camp. But then there's an injury. And so I'm not writing him off. I just, damn it, I want to see it. And I'm excited, and I'm rooting for him. My energy is excitement for the young man. And so if now is finally his time, then he has a maybe an outside opportunity, but he has a certainly a chance to get into the rotation. And could he be the number one or two receiver? Yeah, potentially so. If he performs up to the billing that I've heard, then I think there's no reason to think that he can't. I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in a, you can play up to five wide receivers. Alabama plays a lot of 11 personnel, so that's three wide receivers. But we'll go four or five sometimes. In the course of this coaching staff, it's hard to say what we'll do. But if there's a good four to seven deep in a wide receiver rotation, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for all the names we've mentioned and the host of names that we've not mentioned that are on this roster, a tremendous amount of opportunity to crack that four to seven deep and receive meaningful reps and meaningful playing time on this team. So Saturday, it'll be interesting to see if we can't start to pencil in some of those names at some of those positions. So we'll see. We'll see certainly how that goes. You can't have a list without having quarterbacks as a watch item. And I'm going to be very specific and maybe take this a little bit of a different direction. But I've got Jalen Milroe on my watch list. We're going to break down the position group as a whole later, probably after A-Day. But I think between, call it January, February through mid-August, is Jalen's time to lock up the position. And I think Saturday is really his first installment payment against that. So far, he's operating, I think, unofficially as the de facto starter. And the coaches have had really nice things to say about him. And you would mostly suspect that at this stage of the game. On paper, I think it's a dream scenario. You've got Jalen Milroe, who's the number six Heisman candidate or vote receiver last year, and he's pairing up with a high octane passing offense coaching staff. Like I said, on paper, that is a combustible in all of the right ways, and so it'll be interesting to see how it comes together. How really does that gel? It's hard to say, but I think there's a trend line that I like, and I'm calling it sort of the invested into line. And so a couple of three data points. I think if you go back to 2022 when Jalen Milroe first really got an opportunity on the field, it was the Arkansas game when Bryce Young went down with an injury. And Milroe did well that day, but mostly running the ball. Limited passing and mostly ran the ball, but he was dynamic. And so there were a lot of Alabama fans, and we talked about it on the podcast. We talked about it on some of our Zoom calls. We said, goodness, give Bill O'Brien a week with that talent and layer in some custom plays, some tailored plays to Jalen's strength. And it'll be interesting to see what Alabama can do. That might be an interesting wrinkle in the offense, even moving forward. And I think mostly Alabama didn't insert any special plays, didn't do anything really different than normal. And Milroe performed well, not great, probably better on the rewatch than our memory would want us to remember. But it wasn't what we wanted. It wasn't what we were hoping for from him. Cut to 2023. We've talked about this. I won't necessarily unpack it, but I still believe the coaching staff didn't want to pick Milroe to win the job. play style, revamping the offense. We've talked again about all of this. Tyler Buckner coming in as a transfer just almost immediately after A-Day. There's evidence that would lean in the way of that being a conclusion. But, you know, Milroe won the job and played well against MTSU, was a big play quarterback against Texas. And by that, I mainly it was boom or bust and had some tremendous plays, and then didn't play at South Florida. And I think the staff at that point realized we're going to have to make this right on the fly. We're going to have to sort of figure this out as we go, because there was no other quarterback ready to step in and play. And I think the progress was incremental, and it was additive as the season went on. The offseason went the bye week went a long way for the coaching staff to insert wrinkles, and Milroe to sort of pick them up. And by the time you get to the last third of the season, Milroe was really playing some inspired ball. There was the Kentucky game where he made a couple plays that reminded me of Bryce Young. And then against Georgia, no less, he had a couple of plays where he knew where the receiver was going to be, and he knew if he could just sidestep and make a move and put the ball in play, he knew that it was going to hit the receiver. And there was a really nice sort of crossing underneath cross that he hit, and certainly other big plays as well. But he was playing, Milroe was playing with an instinctiveness that had been sort of refined with assistance from the coaching staff over the course of that season. Well, jumped now to 2024, where he enters as the presumptive starter and is receiving the greatest level of investment that he has. His confidence has to be outstanding, entering what positions itself to be his second year as a starter. It's his program. It's his team in a way that it has not yet been. And so what's the payoff? How does that manifest in elevated performance? How has he continued to grow? And I think Saturday is an opportunity to see that. I actually think Saturday is an opportunity for him to put the competition to bed and conclusively be the number one quarterback going into not just fall camp, but the season as well. So that'll be interesting to see. The last of my five is kicker. Will Reichert's not walking through that door. He's done it once. He's not doing it again. He's legitimately out of eligibility, but he traded that eligibility in to become the NCAA all-time scorer, which is still sort of a wow thing to think about. But he's out of eligibility. He's headed pro, and we wish nothing but the best for him. And but who tries to fill the void? Now, look, no one's going to fill it on a one-for-one basis. It doesn't work that way. But the candidate to sort of step in and take the biggest shot at it and take the most boots, I think, is Connor Talty. He is the leading candidate, and reports have been that he's been hitting the ball very, very well. So I'd love to see him nail a couple really nice kicks in A-Day. Just so we don't sit through the summer not knowing what we have, I'd like to have a little bit of confidence that our kicking game is going to be functional, and I think Connor can help us out with that on Saturday, so we'll see how that goes. Those are the five watch items that I have. We easily could have talked about defensive linemen, rush ends, linebackers, how they're going to stack up, tight ends. There's a roster of sort of tight ends, and it'll be interesting to see how we split those possessions or those opportunities. But we'll have plenty of time to break all of that down as we move forward in the offseason. Let's do real quickly just a glimpse of things that lie ahead for the podcast. We're going to do a post-A-Day wrap-up, and so we're going to talk a little bit about what we've seen, maybe revisit some of these topics just as a function of the conversation. I'm sure there's a litany of players that we'll have things to say about, and where we have sort of evolved into greater positions of comfort or discomfort. So we'll see how that plays out. We want to talk about transfers. We do think there's additional transfers more than likely coming in, but there may be a couple going out as well. So as we get the other side of A-Day and into the portal, we'll talk about transfers. We may do sort of a netting. These are all of the transfers that left. These are all of the transfers that came in. And how would we rank those and on a sort of a side-by-side compare? I think that might be an interesting thing. I might look for a volunteer to hop on the line, and we just draft the transfers and let that sort of dictate. So that might be kind of fun. I'm always a sucker for a good draft. So we'll see how that plays off. We want to talk about the projected two deep. And what's interesting is we may do that more than once. If we did that right now, it would change on Saturday. And then if we did it Saturday, it would change sort of mid-May when the next portal cycle goes open. So we'll probably start throwing darts on the two deep wall coming out of A-Day, and then we'll tweak it coming out of the portal sort of window and going into fall camp, and then coming out of fall camp. We may shake up our two deeps. But I think our first sort of official entry in the two deep discussion will be coming out of A-Day. So we'll see how that goes. We're putting together some interviews. We have sort of a list of folks that we want to talk to. And so we need to get on our horse and pursue some of that. But hopefully that's going to come through, and hopefully we'll have some interesting interviewees to spend with you guys. And we're going to do a push for 15. This season is going to be amazingly so the 15th season of the Alabama Football Podcast. And we're super excited about that. And what we'd like to do is see if we can't add, before the start of the season, add 15 more members to sort of our, it's not a Patreon, it's sort of a homemade Patreon, but sort of our support team, which I still don't like that name. It's our support team. Podcast supporters, we'd like to see if we can't get 15 more before we start our 15th season. So if you've been straddling the fence on that, reach out. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer those. We are going to be, I say we, it's me, but then it's actually going to be, it is we, because it's going to be some of our podcast listeners that are part of the support team. So you could test drive how cool of a group that is. But we're going to be in Tuscaloosa for the game Saturday. Super excited about that. I wasn't sure that I was going to be able to make it. And so super excited to be in town for this A-Day and then any A-Day, and then hanging out with some good friends at any time is a good time as well. So we're available. You know how to reach us, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. So if you have an interest in, like, hey, let's see if we can't hook up and grab a drink or something before or after the game, let's reach out, and I'll be on my phone, and I'll have a lookout for that. We may or may not hit sessions after the game. That's a little bit of a tradition, but we may not do that. We may do something else. So we'll sort of let the wisdom of the crowd dictate that. But if you're out and about in Tuscaloosa and want to hook up with us, definitely reach out, and we'll see if we can't make that happen. In the meantime, you know what we do. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course. Roll Tide.
Save big on brunch for Mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.